morning. My name is Holly Howard. I'm with the California Department of Public Health STD Control Branch. In this talk, I'll be highlighting the results from research performed in California over the past 4 years, collecting population-specific data to help inform new chlamydia screening guidelines for California women over age 25. I'd like to acknowledge my very talented and inspiring co-authors listed here for their immeasurable assistance in these research efforts. First, a little background to the problem. Most of us here today believe excessive chlamydia screening in populations with low morbidity has implications. And the most obvious of these is that this practice is an ineffective use of limited resources. Additionally, excessive screening in a low prevalence population can lower the positive predictive value of the diagnostic test, leading to a higher proportion of false positive test results. And this can result in unnecessary treatment, as well as possibly financial, emotional, and relationship trauma for those misdiagnosed clients. This slide graphically depicts the problem we face in California, namely the overscreening that is occurring within the low prevalence population of family planning women over age 25. This graph shows 2006 chlamydia test volume and prevalence data by age group for women tested for chlamydia by California's FPAC program. FPAC, the Family PAC, is a California entitlement program that provides comprehensive reproductive health care to low-income female and male residents in the state. The red line in this graph represents a chlamydia prevalence of 3%, the state's cost-effective cutoff for universal screening, which was chosen based on research of the literature, statewide surveillance data, and our current level of resources in California. Chlamydia prevalence drops below this line in groups of women over age 25, yet the chlamydia test volume remains quite high, as you can see, across these older age groups, with 50% of all family PAC, chlamydia testing occurring in the population of women over age 25. This practice of screening older adult women with chlamydia prevalence lower than the cost-effective level is not an effective use of the limited resources we have in California. In an effort to reduce chlamydia screening among California family planning women over age 25, we felt it was first necessary to provide our family planning clinicians with effective targeted screening recommendations that were both clearly defined and evidence-based using data from their own unique patient population. Therefore, objectives for research to meet this goal became the following. Among non-pregnant women over age 25 seeking family planning services in California, we sought first to determine the predictors of chlamydia infection within this population, then to use these predictors to develop targeted screening algorithms for chlamydia that were both sensitive and specific for this group of women. And finally, we wanted to validate the results from this research among a broad patient sample that was representative of California's overall family planning population of women over 25. To meet the first objective, to determine the predictors for chlamydia infection for women over 25, the California STD Control Branch designed a rigorous data collection study to test a variety of possible risk factor associations. The study design was cross-sectional. Sites were eligible to participate if they provided family planning services and if they offered universal chlamydia screening to their female clients regardless of age. Efforts were made to include study sites with diverse levels of chlamydia morbidity among their patient populations. Patients were considered eligible for participation in the study if they were female, currently sexually active, which we define as a self-report of vaginal sex within the past 12 months, not currently known to be pregnant, and over age 25, though specifically due to the limitations and resources available for this particular research project, we had to restrict this group to those aged 26 to 30. Data for the study were collected via three different sources. We had self-administered patient questionnaires, and they were used to collect the patient's demographics, her current relationship status, sexual behavior during the past 3 and 12 months, and 12-month STD history. Clinicians were asked to complete clinical evaluation forms, which collected the patient's reasons for visit, her birth control method, report of any current STD exposure, history of STDs in the past 12 months, presenting symptoms, signs, diagnoses, and whether presumptive treatment was provided for chlamydia and or gonorrhea. And from laboratory databases, we obtained chlamydia and gonorrhea results. In the results that follow, chlamydia prevalence has been estimated by test positivity, statistical analyses use crude and adjusted odds ratios to measure the associations of patient factors with chlamydia positivity, and these were determined using chi-square tests and unconditional logistic regression modeling. Screening algorithms were developed by comparing the sensitivities and positive predictive values of various combinations of those patient factors that were shown to be associated with chlamydia in our univariate and multivariate analyses. In total, the study ran in 9 clinics from 3 California Family Planning agencies. Data were collected on 1,243 unique eligible clients aged 26 to 30 who had matching chlamydia test result data. The average chlamydia positivity across the sites was 3.1%, with a range of 1.8 to 5% in this group of women. And the study ran from May 2003 to November 2005, with each clinic participating for an average of 12 consecutive months. In order to determine predictors for chlamydia that would ultimately prove effective in targeting chlamydia screening specifically, it was important for us to first identify and then exclude from the screening cohort patients with clinical indications that already clearly warranted diagnostic testing for chlamydia. Clinical indications that would have clearly warranted chlamydia diagnostic testing were defined as report of current contact or exposure to any STD, presentation of a chlamydia-indicative clinical syndrome, diagnosed on exam and further defined as either cervicitis or pelvic inflammatory disease based on the specifically clinically observed signs listed on each here, and having a new STD, either confirmed or presumptively treated, that was diagnosed in the office on the same visit day, warranting further testing for comorbidity with other STDs, including chlamydia, as per current CDC guidelines. This slide shows our chlamydia prevalence and proportion of cases by clinical presentation for participants in the study. Among our 1,243 participants, there were 39 chlamydia cases, giving an overall prevalence of 3.1%. And when we stratified this group to pull out those patients with clinical indications for chlamydia diagnostic testing, as defined on that last slide, the chlamydia prevalence jumped to 4.5%, supporting the need to continue to offer diagnostic testing for chlamydia as defined in this study. Among the remaining patients considered the cohort eligible for screening now, the prevalence was reduced to 2.9%, just under the state's cost-effective cutoff point. This small group of clients with obvious indications for chlamydia testing represented only 18% of the cases, 13% of the population tested. 82% of the cases were found in the group without any clear indications for testing, which was also 87% of the population tested. And one important note I'd like to make here, if we were to prohibit screening altogether in older females and rely solely on diagnostic testing, which is often suggested, we would potentially miss over 80% of the chlamydia in this population of women. So now the question for us became, how can we target screening to capture these remaining cases, or at least the majority of them, while still reducing the overall number of patients we would have to screen? This slide summarizes the study's univariate analysis results, providing a list of the factors that were statistically associated with chlamydia. The factors that were predictive of chlamydia were patient indication that a recent partner possibly had concurrent partners, and that's a risk factor I'm going to define further on the next slide. This was measured for two time periods, within the past 3 months and the past 12 months. Both were statistically significantly associated with chlamydia. Having multiple partners, we define as both either more than one or more than two partners during the past 3 or 12 months, and having a new diagnosis of. The two factors found to be protective from chlamydia were being married and being in an otherwise stable relationship defined as either being married, engaged, or living with one's partner. Having a new sex partner within the past 3 months showed borderline predictive significance. Only the factor relating to a partner possibly having other concurrent partners was independently associated with chlamydia in the multivariate analysis. This question about patient indicating that a recent partner possibly had concurrent partners was strongly predictive of chlamydia in our research, and I wanted to quickly go over the exact question that was asked in the study. This question was found on the patient's self-administered health history questionnaire, and it reads, at any time within the past 12 months, and within the past 3 months was asked in a separate question, did any of your male partners have sex of any type with someone else while they were still in a relationship, sexual relationship with you? And the patient could answer, yes, definitely, because sometimes you know. Not sure it is possible, which we hope to get at some level of intuition or suspicion that the patient had about her partners. Or no, it is very unlikely. Notice we didn't offer the option, no, definitely not. It's our one little attempt to educate. The two answer options, yes, definitely, and not sure it was possible, were combined and compared with the negative response in chi-squared and multivariate analysis and showed strong and very consistent independent association with chlamydia. There are a few key study limitations we should consider when interpreting these results. First, the study represented a convenient sample of clinics with little geographic diversity, mostly located on California's central coast and in the central and so may not be representative of the overall California family population. Next, as it was necessary to limit the study population to women aged 30 and under, it was unknown if these results were applicable to women over this age. And finally, it's likely that there are other risk factors that are either unmeasured in the study or at frequency too low to provide adequate power in this analysis that may also be predictive of women in this population. So, in order to respond to some of these limitations and to meet our objective of validating the results from the risk factor study on this broader patient sample, more representative of the California's diverse family planning population of women over age 45, a supplemental study was developed. This new study was designed as a case-controlled chart abstraction. The study sample was pulled from all IPP chlamydia prevalence monitoring clinics throughout California, excluding San Francisco, that were actively submitting data to the project during the time period of July to December 2006. Medical records were reviewed from these sites for non-pregnant women aged 26 to 44 who were tested for chlamydia and had submitted IPP data. Cases were defined as all chlamydia-positive patients in the sample, approximately 100 unique patients, people, and a random sample of chlamydia-negative patients represented the control group with approximately 400 such patients chosen from a total cohort of over 2,500 chlamydia-negative eligible women. Study staff systematically collected data from medical charts, choosing data variables that best matched those collected in the previous risk factor study as possible. Analytical methods reflected those used in the previous study, except that the case control study design required that patient characteristic estimates that define the overall negative population be derived by weighting the chlamydia negative sample proportions, and this was done using sample proportions by clinic site. Seventeen of 20 possible IPP sites were eligible for participation in this evaluation project, and many were already performing some form of targeted screening for women over age 25. The sites were very diverse geographically, and unlike the homogeneous family planning dedicated clinic type participating in the last study, the clinic types in this evaluation varied broadly and included not only these family planning dedicated sites, but also family planning STD integrated sites, community clinics, and after excluding missing charts and patients who were found to be pregnant on their visit date and other ineligible patients, there were 445 unique client charts abstracted in total, including 83 positives and 362 negative clients. The average positivity across the sites within our final study sample of women aged 26 to 44 was 3.2%. To parallel with the data shown for the previous study, this slide shows the chlamydia prevalence and proportion of cases by clinical presentation for participants in this new study, which we've been calling the Over 25 Evaluation. Among the sample, and after weighting the results as described, there was an overall prevalence, as I just mentioned, of 3.2%. And when we stratified this group to look specifically at those patients with clinical indications for chlamydia diagnostic testing, as defined in the previous study, the chlamydia prevalence increased to 6.9%, again supporting the need to continue to offer diagnostic testing for among those remaining patients considered the cohort eligible for screening now, the prevalence was reduced to 2.6%, again below the state's cost-benefit cutoff. This small group of clients with obvious indications for testing represented 29% of the cases and 13% of the population. 71% of the chlamydia cases were found in the group without any clear indications for testing, which represented 87%. Stratifying this population further into the two age groups, 26 to 30 and above age 30, or 31 to 44 specifically, was very enlightening. Though these two groups are most often tossed together in that overarching demographic of women over age 25, this simple stratification highlights the significant difference in morbidity and probably in risk between these two groups of younger and older adult women. With a 3.5% positivity seen in these younger women aged 26 to 30, and only 1.6% seen in women over age 30. The univariate analysis results from the over 25 evaluation are shown here, providing a list of the risk factors that were found to be predictive for chlamydia in the study. Two of these predictors, indication that partner possibly had concurrent partners and having a recent new partner, were also associated with chlamydia infection in the previous study. In this current study, two factors, younger age, specifically being within the age group of 26 to 30, and again, indication of partners possibly having concurrent partners, were both independently associated with chlamydia and multivariate analysis. So the final objective of this research was to develop sensitive and specific targeted screening algorithms for chlamydia infection effective for California women over age 25. And in order to provide a side-by-side comparison, the algorithm results from both research projects are being presented here. First are algorithm results for the first study, the chlamydia risk factor study. The performance of these screening algorithms can be compared here based on four different things. We have the percentage of chlamydia cases detected by each, as shown in this first column. Obviously, we want this to be as high as possible. The percentage of the overall population that was screened when you follow the given criteria, and like this was as possible to get the biggest range of that. The chlamydia prevalence within the population that screened, again, we like this to be high, and the chlamydia prevalence left in the population not screened, we like this to be very low. Universal screening is provided first as a reference point and would, of course, capture 100% of chlamydia cases, but it requires screening 100% of the clients. The prevalence in this overall group of 26 to 30-year-olds, as you might recall, was 2.9%, and since all patients were screened, there was no chlamydia left. The next algorithm is the closest we can replicate using the data we collected in the study to CDC's current guideline recommendations for targeting screening in women over age 25. While CDC does not provide any time frames in which to narrow these factors, we chose the time frames from our study to perform the best in univariate analysis, which is likely to improve the performance of these recommendations. This algorithm targets the following risk factors for screening: having multiple partners, understood to mean more than one partner and further defined here as within the past 12 months, having a new partner, which we defined as within the past 3 months, and having a history of chlamydia ever, which we actually limited to a history within the past year. This screening algorithm would have captured 76% of chlamydia cases in our study population, required screening 49% of the overall population, and would result in a chlamydia prevalence in the screen group of 5% and a prevalence in the group not screened of 1%. The final algorithm listed for this group has supplemented the CDC algorithm with one additional risk factor, that one relating to partners possibly having concurrent partners during the past 12 months. These combined screening criteria would have captured 93% of the cases, required the screening of 70% of the population, so a reduction of about 30%, and the chlamydia positivity in the population screened would have been 4.5%, with 0.8% of the chlamydia cases left in. Looking then at the results from the second study with the broader population and the age group 26 to 44, screening all the patients in the sample gave a positivity of 2.6%. Screening universally up to age 30 and not at all above that age would have captured 69% of the cases and required the screening of 51% of the population, giving a positivity of 3.5% in this group screened and 1.6% in the group missed. Screening based on the current CDC guidelines would have captured 58% of the positives and required screening only 35% of the population. The positivity in that group screened was 6% and 2.3% in this group left in the group not screened. And finally, this CDC plus algorithm, as defined above, would have captured 81% of the cases while only requiring screening of 44% of the population over age 25. We would have a positivity of 7.5% now in the group that was screened and 1.4%. There are a handful of limitations to the study, the over 25 evaluation, that need to be acknowledged. First, many clinics participating in the study were already to various degrees targeting chlamydia screening in their older female populations, and this could have led to a possible data bias in our results. Such a bias would have resulted in inflated prevalence rates, an underestimate in the associations between risk factors and chlamydia, and probably some unpredictable changes to the algorithm. Next, this is a chart review. Clinical and behavioral data study were limited to only those data points which were documented in the charts. And finally, the weighting techniques that we used in this study can only provide approximate results and are especially limited when assessing the impact of rare exposures and out. A number of implications for screening recommendations for non-pregnant women over age 25 resulted from these research efforts. Regarding the predictors for chlamydia, patient indication that a recent sex partner had concurrent partners was the strongest predictor of chlamydia in both of our research projects, which highlights the need to be asking patients questions not just about themselves, but also about the perceived risk level of their partners as well. Other fairly consistent behavioral predictors of chlamydia in this research, which support what we continue to see in literature reviews and existing guidelines, relate to having new or multiple partners, and we were able to define these with some evidence-based time periods. And finally, younger age, even among our already quote-unquote older cohort, continues to be a strong demographic. Regarding targeted screening algorithms, while on the one hand, the performance of algorithms such as these, which use combinations of patient factors found to be predictive for chlamydia, can be objectively measured and compared, which is nice, it's important to note that in choosing the most appropriate algorithm for a given population, one would need to consider not just performance, but also how these various algorithms fit within a given jurisdiction's priorities and its available resources. And just for example, would capturing 65% of the cases be satisfactory if it meant the possibility of reducing screening by 50%? Or is it in some cases more of a priority and it's affordable to aim for targeting 85% of the cases even if you only expect to reduce screening by 20 or 30%? In addition to a review of the literature and California surveillance data and other local research and evaluation projects, results from the chlamydia risk factor study and over 25 evaluation have helped to inform us the development of new statewide targeted chlamydia screening guidelines for California family planning women over the age of 25, and I thought I'd just put the slide up so you can see what we're considering at the moment. This slide shows our current proposal for chlamydia testing and screening guidelines for this population. We're going to be clearly distinguishing chlamydia testing from chlamydia screening based on its clinical indications noted here, and we're recommending targeted screening of women over age 25 who either believe a partner they had during the past 12 months may possibly have concurrent partners, or who they themselves had either more than one partner during the past 12 months or a new partner during the past 3 months. And there's going to be additional discussion recommending prioritizing screening of women aged 26 to 30 among the larger group of women under 25, with the note that local prevalence over 3% may in itself indicate universal screening within subgroups, certain subgroups of these women. Our guidelines will conclude by stressing the importance of repeat testing for positive patients 3 months after treatment. A very big thank you to my amazing colleagues from both the California Student Control Branch and the California Family Health Council who collaborated with me on these efforts, as well as the California and other project areas, IPP sites, for their willingness to let us pore over and dissect their medical record trust. So the question was, just to repeat it for those listening on the computer over there, the question was, this is all well and good to come up with some great screening criteria. However, how do we actually get the clinicians in the field to follow them? How do we convince them that this is what they should be following and not sort of their not just screening everybody, which a lot of clinicians feel is good practice. I think there are probably a number of interventions. I think that David was mentioning some success that they had in Region 10 with a few different ones hitting interventions that were addressing either, you know, the statewide, the clinic level, the clinician level. I think training is huge. In California, where our STD control branch is also part of the STD HIV prevention training center, so a lot of what we develop on one side is then implemented in our training on the other side. I think by using data, we're hoping that by using data from their own population, that we're gonna, and when we did these studies, we actually went back to every single site that participated, presented the results. So these are your patients. This is what we found. And, you know, by emphasizing that there are some risks to overscreening, and emphasizing the false positive angle probably as well. I think that we found we have some success. Joan can speak on that more if you want to talk to her later. In the Family Path program, by providing clinicians with data specific to them, specific to the clinic, specific to the clinician, on how they perform, how they're, and this is, we've been doing this with screening coverage at this point, but we can follow up with following the screening criteria as well. And just having that paper in front of them to see how they perform compared to other sites sometimes is useful. I'm sure limited success with that, so it's tough. That's the challenge. It's the challenge. And I think that we are hoping that by very carefully collecting data from their population, we are hoping to have sort of a head start. This is your population. Another thing that my boss, Gail Bolin, often says is that if a client comes in and asks for a chlamydia test, that doesn't necessarily have to drive a test. It could drive discussion, risk assessment, possibly a pelvic exam, but not necessarily the test. So next up is Bobby McDonald from the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Health.